Hello, this is Brian McLean. Welcome to Our Story with God, Episode 8, Exodus. So last week we went through the plagues and we saw how God not only punished Egypt for refusing to acknowledge him and do as he said, but he also took this opportunity to show the children of Israel that he was strong enough and dependable enough to fulfill his promises. He was able to do what they could not do for themselves, and that is free them from the sort of iron grasp of Pharaoh and the Egyptians. So at this point in time, after 9 plagues, Egypt's gods are figuratively lying in shambles, and the country of Egypt is quite literally lying in shambles. They've lost their cattle. Many of them have died in the plague of the hail and so forth. They have no source of food. They have no drink. They have nothing where they can make clothing. So all their crops have been destroyed. The locusts have come and eaten everything. They have no confidence in the Nile River. They have no confidence even in the sun. They have no confidence in their Pharaoh. And at this point in time, God institutes the Passover. It's going to be a solemn ceremony for the Hebrews, and it's going to be the final nail in the coffin, quite literally, for the Egyptians. And so God institutes this ceremony and this meal, and it shows God's protection. And so everybody, they eat the meal the way they're supposed to. They take the blood of the lamb, and if you remember, they smear some of it on the doorposts, and the angel of death comes through town. And everyone who doesn't have that blood on their doorposts, he kills the firstborn in that home. And so everybody in Egypt, there's this great weeping and mourning, and it's sort of reminiscent to how the Hebrews would have been as the Egyptians were slaying their male baby boys when Moses was born. And so at this point in time, Pharaoh has lost it all. He realized he is crushed. He's defeated. He no longer has any ability or desire to protest. He orders the Israelites to leave, which they are more than happy to do. Moses actually has all of the Hebrews ask for their neighbors and so forth for articles of clothing and jewelry. And it's sort of this last plundering of the Egyptians. And apparently they're more than happy to give of their material goods to just get the Israelites to leave, go away. And so the Israelites head into the wilderness, and the country of Egypt is left in tatters. There is one final salvo, I guess. There's this one final battle that's not really a battle. Moses leads the children of Israel through the Red Sea, and the army of Pharaoh is drowned in their chariots behind them. God opens the sea for Israel and closes the sea back on Egypt. And so they're left not only without any material goods, but now they're left without a military as well. And so here it's time for this nation of slaves to become the people of God. They had started out, you think about Egypt, they had gone through this whole cycle of blessings and curses. And the Hebrews, they started out showing up in Egypt as Joseph, a slave, who ended up rising to this incredible position of power. And that was to save the kingdom of Egypt. They had those years of want, of lack, and it was because of the vision that God gave and the obedience to Joseph's interpretation of the dream that they were able to avoid starvation on a large scale. But they didn't honor that. They didn't respect that. They didn't remember that. And so now, not one slave, but a whole nation of slaves, they came in as one slave, 430 years later, they leave as freed slaves. They are no longer slaves. But now, this entire people group of slaves has to learn how to become a nation and how to become the people of God. And so they go into a wilderness that the people of Israel do not know well at all. But Moses knows this land because it's where he's been for the last 40 years. He heads into the wilderness and he heads to Mount Sinai, the place where the burning bush was, the place where it all started for him. And so they go there and think about how God presents himself as a pillar of cloud and of fire leading them. And when they come to Mount Sinai, there's this massive storm cloud, so to speak, and there's fire and there's smoke. And yet somehow the Hebrews, the Israelites, decide now's a good time to make a golden calf. This is the way we visualize our God. This is who led us out of Egypt, this golden cow. And so God gives them the Ten Commandments, and they respond with idolatry. And so it really kind of gives you a sense of where their mindset is, where their faith is, where their belief is. And so God, you remember that suzerain treaty where the greater king dictates to the lesser king the way things are going to be? Well, God is here at Mount Sinai, and he kind of gives them an option. And he says, basically, I am your God. Do this or don't do this, but these are my rules. This is how you have to live. Kind of a take it or leave it scenario. And so they get the Ten Commandments, and so they now have laws to live by. But then also they get a few other things. He gives them instructions on how to worship. He gives them rules on daily life and social justice because they don't really have any sort of set law. Again, they've been living among the Egyptians as slaves. Now they're an entire people group. They need rules. They need laws. And so God gives them laws. And so finally, he establishes a covenant with them, and he gives them details on the tabernacle and the other furniture that will be used in his worship. So think about it. If God is giving these kinds of instructions, do you think anybody else in the world around them was worshiping in this way? I don't know. I haven't done the study on it, but it'd be kind of interesting to think about. So God establishes this treaty. So the trick is, in that suzerain treaty, there were usually two copies of the agreement. And so when Moses came down the mountain with two tablets, it always made me wonder, the greater king was supposed to keep a copy of the agreement, and the lesser king, maybe the two tablets, there were, five on one and five on the other, just too much information to put on one stone tablet. Maybe one tablet had the four commands related to worshiping God, and the other one had the six commands of how to deal with your neighbor. I like to think of it as, since we don't know what's on those tablets, what if it were two identical copies? Because now what's going to happen is the people of Israel are going to keep a copy, and God is going to keep a copy, but they're going to be in the same place, because for the first time, God, with his tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant, is coming down to actually live among his people. And this is a very radical, incredible idea. So before, again, they're slaves, and they're crying out to God, who finally hears and remembers them. And now they have God, who has agreed to live among them in this tabernacle. Now there's still a veil. There's still something separating humanity from God. That Holy of Holies, go and study the make out of the tabernacle. It's actually fun to try to draw out what you think the layout would have looked like, and then go online and kind of research a little bit, see what some other people's ideas are. There's some interesting ones out there that have a much better idea than I got that from just reading it. But for the first time really since the Garden of Eden, God is coming down to live with mankind. And it's a really incredible thing. So here, the people of Israel begin to become a nation, and more importantly, the people of God. And therefore, we have the Exodus, and for 40 years, they're going to meander around the wilderness, due in large part to their own failures, but God is with them now in a very real sense. So thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will be back next week looking at how we begin to go into God's form of government.